Hello and welcome to this episode of Superhero Ethics. Today we are talking to one of the bravest heroes in the known universe, someone who faces dangers and troubles every day of their professional life. Yes, I'm talking about a middle school teacher. Someone who teaches middle school and uses comic book characters to teach lessons about ethics and justice and math and everything else. We're talking to Emily Sissel, and we'll get right back to that after this commercial break. We have no control over. Welcome back. I'm Matthew, your host. Joining me today is longtime Panda fan and middle school teacher, Emily Sissel. Emily, I have taught Sunday school to 8th graders, and I've been around 12, 13, 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
How do you teach them every... Do you have, like, a cape and a shield? I mean, this is superhero work you're doing. How do you do it?
I do it the way Carol Danvers completes any mission, and that's with dry sarcasm and a winning smirk.
That seems like a very useful combination, I think, for middle school kids especially. Well, so I'm super excited to have you on here. And just to kind of give some people the backstory, Emily is part of Stranded Panda Network. She's been commenting on our posts and liking a lot of the podcasts. And you recently posted a video of you talking about using comic books as part of your education work at a conference you went to. And I just saw that. I loved your video. And I thought, this is a great topic because, you know, on this podcast, we talk about, like, the ethical questions in these stories, but it's also fun to talk about kind of the larger conversations. And from what I can tell, it sounds like you're doing kind of something similar, that you're using these stories that your kids already know or are going to enjoy knowing to teach them. So to talk a little bit about the kind of how this whole thing started for you.
Yeah, so I have been reading comics since I was really, really little. I started with, like, DC Scooby-Doo comics. Nice. And then as I got older, I got into, like, some Ant-Man and Doctor Strange until I, like, fully, I think, fledged into a whole comic book mm-hmm. nerd and fan and such in high school with when Carol Danvers took on the Captain Marvel shield and going through all of that. And I kind of, like, when I went into teaching, I didn't want to have to fight with my students about things because constantly teachers are having to fight with them about having side conversations about whatever popular culture is going on or even, like, talking, like, sports or whatever it is. And rather than fighting them on that, why don't we actually use the resources being created to help drive the conversations and using, you know, characters they already look up to to help drive those conversations.
I mean, that makes total sense to me. I kind of wish we'd had that in my own school.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's just like, especially with middle schoolers, you constantly feel like you're having to fight them over everything. Mm-hmm. And rather than just, like, fight them, just go with the flow.
That seems to make a lot more sense. And I know, actually, that I just read a Stan Lee biography, and I know one of the things he talked about, and we get into 8 million theories about Stan Lee and how much credit he takes for things versus Kirby and a whole mess of worms there. But he talked a lot about his belief that, you know, he wanted kids and then teenagers and adults, but especially, like, younger people, to enjoy comic books and to maybe, like, you know, have it raise some questions for them to think about. And so I love that it seems like what you're doing is very much in line with that. Like, they're already reading this stuff and they're going to ask questions about it. So why not use that as part of teaching?
Yeah. And that was the whole, like, point of them even creating. I mean, like, they were creating comics for entertainment purposes, but they were drawing all their inspiration from the real life things happening. I mean, just like any author, they draw inspiration from real life events or things they're going through at the time. So when you look at comics and graphic novels being made throughout the ages, they're being impacted by what is happening in society and culture at that time in history.
I mean, I remember some of my favorite comics, like, about Peter Parker or some of the X-Men stuff, mm-hmm. were when, like, I can't relate to shooting webs out of my wrists or to, you know, having all these superpowers. But when they're having the exact same fights with their parents or, like, you know, trying to get their high school homework done, like, I can relate to that. And it creates a bond that, I mean, I love Batman, but I'm no billionaire. There's very little, you know, I can relate to there. Although, you know, I mean, there's a whole day with all this stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I think I love that idea. And I love that using that to the kids. Well, and let's kind of just start with, so for you with comics, You said you started the Scooby-Doo ones, which I will remind people who don't like DC Comics, you know, Scooby-Doo is part of it.
It is. I'm not a big DC fan, but I love the Scooby-Doo comics, so.
There you go. There you go. So what was it like for you as you started getting into more, like Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel really influenced you? I get the sense that, like, at some point it wasn't just, like, fun stories and cool art, but that you were, like, relating to the questions and some of the ethics stuff. And what was that like for you growing up?
Yeah, so at the – this is going to get a little serious, y'all. Me going through high school, I was in two sexually abusive and emotionally abusive relationships at separate mm-hmm. points in high school, as unfortunately most females go through. And so Carol Danvers – back when she was Ms. Marvel, like way back in the day, she actually goes through a point where she gets like sexually harassed and assaulted. And they kind of like brushed over that fact in their past. And when they came out with all her comics, they kind of just like weren't afraid to go at it. And so they had her go through all these things and had her go through having to deal with like men trying to bring her down and stuff like that. And when I would read those comics, it was helping me get through that time in my life. And then after her, all of a sudden, Wilson is coming out writing the new Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, and I'm getting to relate on that point. And it just kind of like, all of a sudden, I was able to fully relate and immerse myself and finally start seeing like really empowered women in comics for me.
Right. And that's such a powerful story. And thank you for sharing that. And I can see why that would be, you know, I hate that you had to go through that. But as you said, like that is not an uncommon experience. And I've not read those myself, but I hope that like, of course, to me, most important that like people who've been through similar things can relate to that. But also I can imagine others who, you know, don't know about that or haven't been victimized by that or often, you know, if they're male of some kind, might be perpetrators without even understanding that. Like just getting to have more of an experience of that seems so important. I know the Captain Marvel movie is the one I know most. And I remember when it first came out and there was a lot of folks, primarily masculine of some kind, saying things like that, they didn't really understand they didn't think the character had a journey. They didn't understand, like, what were her challenges? What did she go through? And it was only when a number of women were able to point to things like, you know, look at her interactions. You know, she has a man in her life who's constantly telling her to limit her power, who at the very end, you know, says, like, you have to fight on my terms. And she basically says, you know, hell no, I'm not going to do that.
No.
Like, that there's so many parts of her story that I think a lot of women related to, and that I think it was very helpful for men and masculine folks and like myself to have to kind of sit with for a bit and go like, wait a minute, if we don't understand the journey this character is taking, that's about our lack of understanding, not that the movie's doing a bad job telling the story.
It was Captain Marvel, but now most recently with Black Widow having come out in July, mm-hmm. it was that same kind of journey where like I was sitting in the theater with my partner and he was like, yeah, it was a good movie. And I'm like bawling my eyes out next to him. I'm like, no, you don't understand. This was everything to me.
Yeah.
And so just all the representation in comics and the things that people mm-hmm. have been able to go through, like, it's so easy to be able to draw from it and to bring it into a classroom setting, or even if it's not a classroom setting, because I believe we're all educators, being able to show it to somebody so they can understand a topic better.
Right.
I know, so the convention you talked about, I was actually at AwesomeCon, and that's where I was presenting, was at that Comic-Con. And one of the people that came up to me afterwards was actually a guy who trains paramedics. And he was like, I want to be able to, you know, teach my students a little bit better about, you know, mental health and different mental illnesses. And I was like, oh, have you read Moon Knight?
Oh, yeah.
And so we were able to get into a great conversation about other comics that you can draw from that just to teach people about different things.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I want to hear more in a second about how that affects the students, because I know for me, in previous episodes, I've talked about how for me as a queer and a genderqueer person, how important that kind of representation is, and also as a disabled person. And I think, you know, we had a lot of that after WandaVision, after Falcon the Winter Soldier, people, you know, talking about how important it was to see themselves on screen, and then earlier to see themselves on the pages of the comic book, and why it both matters so much, and why it can be also kind of really hurtful when it's done badly.
Yeah, there's so many great discussions to be had in that, for sure.
So what made you then, so you kind of have this influence your own life, like when you thought about teaching, were you always kind of wanting to like take the comic book into the classroom? Where did that idea start for you?
It did. I did start having the idea of it because I was like, well, people like English classrooms, they'll use like graphic novels and stuff like that. And so I got really curious and I was like, there's got to be a way that every teacher can use something. Yeah. And so I ended up like starting literally just Googling comics in the classroom, using comics in the classroom and stuff like that. And a great website, historycomics.net, I believe. And then the Facebook group that Tim Smith had created. He is also a history teacher, a high school history teacher. And it was like, it's Teaching with Comics, I believe it is. And so I ended up just like requesting to join. And like all of a sudden there was like 100 other educators just like me who were like, what comics can we use? How can we utilize them? And then we just started drawing influence. And it really got me critically thinking more while reading comics, even where like I would go back and reread comics and I'd be like, oh, I could use this to teach this. Like I just had the thought like a couple weeks ago that I could use Poison Ivy and her story and like parts from the, you know, the animated show to teach about eco-terrorism.
Right.
Like just you start like getting those little blips and stuff.
I'm guessing you mean Batman the Animated Series because I love the Harley Quinn show. I'm trying to think if there was a single 30-second clip you could show to middle school students without some offensive term or something like that. I don't think there is there?
I haven't tried yet.
Yeah. Animated series seems the safer choice.
Yeah, regard. I love the Harley Quinn show, unfortunately. A little vulgar.
Yep. That's fair. That yeah, as we were talking about this before off air, you know, that MCU stuff like can work, you know. Netflix Daredevil, Punisher, Jessica Jones, maybe not so much with the kids. So and just to help us understand better, since you're middle school, am I right that you're not like a history teacher or an English teacher? You're kind of a generalist with these kids?
No. For middle school, you specify. I'm a social studies teacher. So I I teach 7th grade civics and economics and 8th grade world cultures.
Okay. Shows you how long it's been since I've been out of school. How confused I am about it. So once you decide to go into it, so when you say you use comics in the classroom, what does that actually mean? What does that look like?
Yeah, so sometimes it's literally just putting an image on a board. One of my favorites, they came out with this some years ago of Superman holding iron chains, not even in costume, just a Superman shirt, and he's protecting a group of protesters in the back like cops. And this came out like in the midst of the heat of a lot of different big protests happening. And so especially like with my civics class, when we get talking about the First Amendment, I love just slapping that image on the board and being like, let's talk about it. What's happening? What do you see? What colors are being used? What do you think is happening? How does this relate to our First Amendment freedoms? Sometimes it's me showing a clip, along with actually reading parts of a comic series, which is what I do with, Civil War. So I show them the clips, when they're introducing the Accords and the part of the Accords and reading some of the Civil War comic, and that gets us talking about government regulation, big business versus small business, federal government versus local government, those conversations. And sometimes it's full on reading an entire comic series, which is what I do with the Vote Loki series, and what I'm going to do this year with Ms. Marvel's No Normal, that first issue by Wilson. Vote Loki, I used to teach elections and political parties. That's probably one of my massive, massive things that we do when we read that comic. And then using Ms. Marvel for world religion for teaching.
Oh, I really love that. Yeah, because I know that her story is so, her own religion being a part of who she is and how she formulates that character is such a central thing.
And how she works as that character. I mean, her religion impacts everything about her being a superhero, how she interacts with the villains, how she interacts with her family. And for me personally, I actually have a lot of students from Pakistan and Afghanistan that have immigrated here in the past, like 6 months to a year. So a lot of Pashto and Urdu speakers, and in the comic itself, it'll actually have some stuff like in Urdu, and I'm excited to see their reactions to seeing something in their language in a comic book.
Yeah, I feel like that was such, because I do think there's often the perception, and with some reality, that geeky stuff, for lack of a better terms, is white, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, like, I know when I was growing up, that we had a black friend who was, you know, part of our kind of like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons groups and stuff like that. And there was a lot of kind of like subtle racism from a lot of us, myself unfortunately included. But also, I know he used to get teased by, you know, other students of color about like, why are you doing white stuff like D&D and things like that? And that obviously there have always been both creators and consumers of this stuff of all races and backgrounds, but just geek community has been presented as very white in really problematic ways. And I think there's been an explosion of people saying like, yeah, it's not just all boys. It's not just all straight people. It's not just all white people.
Yeah.
And I love that you're able to use like that, especially to help people see not only themselves, but to see their own language, to see their own experience on the page.
It is. It's, I'm really excited for when we get to that. It'll be a little while and it'll be my first time doing that. A lot of the times as like new content comes out, I'm like constantly coming up with ideas and just like, I'll go in the front of my classroom like, all right, guys, this is probably going to suck. I have no idea if this is even going to work and function, but we're going to try it out. And I did that with They Called Us Enemy by George Takei. I like threw out pages of that and I was like, all right, we're going to see if reading about this helps us understand this topic in history and understand the 14th Amendment. It might not work. No idea. It ended up like being amazing. And like my students were profoundly impacted, and most of them never even having heard of that moment in history with the Japanese internment camps.
Right. Yeah. I you may have heard me talk about this before. I'm very much a filthy casual. I know it's on screen in comics, even in this regard. And then, but I saw the movie he made about life in those camps.
Yeah.
It was incredibly moving. And I think you're right. To me, I think it's one of the things that I like most about this stuff is that I feel, especially for adults, and so I'm curious how it works for kids, there are to give an example, I found there's a lot of white folks I know who if I sat down with them and said, hey, can I have a conversation with you about white privilege? They'd probably just walk away immediately.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but then when they watched Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and you know, Bucky talks about how even someone as wonderful as Steve Rogers could have been a little bit blind to like what Sam Wilson would go through because of, you know, Steve and Bucky's own privilege. Like I had a lot of fans writing in and saying, you know, I understand the privilege idea now because of this. Like I am open to learning more because the lesson was in that kind of a medium that I might have tuned out otherwise. I'm guessing you find the same kind of thing with kids that like, if you just say we're going to read the Federalist Papers or whatever, they might tune out. But if you say we're going to talk about, you know, Spider-Man and Daredevil trying to challenge the Sokovia Accords using free speech, then they tune in a lot more?
Well, yeah, because it's something that they can understand and grasp. When you talk about something like the Federalist Papers, I mean, that is big, complicated language. There's so many of them. I can't even really understand them trying to sit through and read them because language has changed so vastly since they had been written. But
right.
I can sit down and I can read a comic book and I understand Spider-Man and I understand how Uncle Ben profoundly impacted him in life and yada, 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 because it's geared towards what's more current, what is more popular culture, right? At the time when certain things have been, like if we're especially talking about, you know, using primary sources and old documents, right? They were written at a time that was the language being used.
Right.
Shakespeare was written at a time when that was sort of the language being used. Same thing with the Odyssey, the Iliad. Whereas now, that's not the language being used. So it would it confuses everybody. It confuses me. But it would also confuse SPED students, right? So we're leaving them out of...
Just for those who don't know, so what can you spell out what SPED is?
Yeah, it's special education students. Mm-hmm. And then it also leaves out L students, which are English language learners, who would be, you know, left out of content and never getting to understand it or grasp it. And then when you take something like a comic book where it's, you know, something that they can easily grasp because they know the characters, but also it has lots of pictures and imagery.
Right.
Along with smaller, briefer text, to where it makes it easier to grasp and understand and you can have bigger conversations than me just trying to sit through Huck Finn and understand what in the world they're trying to say.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes so much sense, the idea of using the language of today. For that reason, I mean, I have read some comic books from the 50s and 60s that are not using the language of today. Are you mostly using fairly modern comic books then, or do you have like old issues of Spidey from the 70s that you go into or things like that?
I'm mostly using modern ones. if I was a U.S. history teacher, I think I would use older some older ones because they hit on a lot of U.S. history topics. Right. But I don't teach U.S. history, so it's not as applicable to me. I've given a lot of those resources to my, you know, other colleagues who use that. Mm. But like for me, the topics that we hit on are mostly in more modern day comics that have been written.
I can see that. I can easily imagine, you know, for a history teacher, if you wanted to teach about the 50s and McCarthyism and like the degree of like, just think about the children's censorship, just diving into the comics code authority, you know, and all that kind of stuff about the censorship of comics, oh, yeah, and self-censorship could be a great lesson for that.
Yeah, you can get into so much with that. And it's great use for, because these are all primary sources. These were written, yeah, in the day. This could be considered a comic book, a primary source. Mind-boggling, but it is. And
yeah, for sure.
It's super cool that you would be able to use that. It's just not quite topics that I've taught yet, but I know people who have used, right, them.
I mean, I love that you brought up things like, you know, Shakespeare or the Iliad, or because I think today we think of that as very sort of highfalutin back in the day and forget that, you know, those things, Sophocles and Euripides, were the pop culture of the day. You know, they were the comic books of the day.
They sat around a campfire and told the story over and over again. That was the birth of the Iliad and the Odyssey, and the same with the philosophical tellings of Socrates and Plato. Like, they literally like just sat around and talked about it the way we just sit around and talk about comics.
Yeah. And debate and argue, yep, and all that kind of good stuff. So what kind of response do you get from, like, the school administrators, from parents? Do you have any kind of pushback, or is this something people are just like, oh, thank God my kid is reading, this is great?
I am very lucky in that I teach in a very liberal school district. So I teach in Fredericksburg City Public Schools for Walker Grant Middle School. Shout out to all those people if you ever listen to this. And they're very liberal. Like, when BLM protests and stuff like that started happening, our school board kind of walked out and they were like, Black Lives Matter. And they were like, done. That's and fantastic. Done. And so they're incredibly liberal. So when I come up to them and I'm like, I have this great idea, they're like, you know what, Emily, just go for it. And I'm like, perfect, because I wasn't sure if you were actually going to be totally sold on the fact that I'm going to use Loki to teach about political parties. But all right.
Yeah. I love that.
And so they've kind of just given me like a lot of free rein to be able to do this. But I have had to fight for getting just money to be able to buy like class sets of books and stuff like that. Mm, and so
what I did was
I put together my lesson plans and I took the research, because there's plenty of, you know, journals and research done on the use of comic books and how it helps literacy and such. And I kind of like compiled that together and I was like, here you go, please spend money on me. And luckily they did the first time. I'm hoping to hear back about the second time, getting some more class sets of things.
Uh-huh.
So it can definitely be a fight. And the thing is, like, if you're an educator, you're really used to fighting, yeah, everybody for your students, for funding, for getting a pay raise, for everything. And it's just like anything in life. If you put together, you know, just like T'Challa in the What If episode, spoiler if you haven't seen it, you know, a good conversation can solve most things.
Yeah.
And so putting together those resources and being like, hey, you weren't willing to go out and do the research, but right here, I laid it all out for you. This is why I want to do this. Just give me a chance. If it fails, it fails, and that's okay, because it happens. Like, half the year is a failure for the most part with things that you try. And when it comes to parents, again, it's just kind of towing that fine line of not insulting them and being like, your kid is finally reading. Please just let them read a comic book. And again, giving them that same research and just talking to them and hearing them out. I haven't had too much in terms of parents being like, why is my child reading a comic? Usually I can just go, I'm a teacher, it's for education. And they are like, cool. And then walk away.
That's better. I know you said you're often in contact with other people doing this and other all around the country or even around the world. Have you heard from other colleagues in not so liberal areas who have had a lot more pushback? Or does this, it's sort of kind of a question of like, you know, how much market penetration we now have. Like, it's pretty much most people are just kind of on board now with that this is a legitimate form of literature, or have you heard from others who get a lot more pushback?
I think it's a legitimate form of literature now for people. Yeah. And I think I think what we can really thank for that are things like Classics Illustrated that made like classics like Romeo and Juliet and such into into graphic novels. And I think we can thank those and those graphic novels for making that happen for Maws and all of those. Yeah. Because if it hadn't been for them and English teachers being able to use them, especially with those SPED and L students, we never would have been able to keep expanding and being like, hey, look at all these other resources. The single issue of Spider-Man teaches this topic.
Yeah, I remember I was in high school when Maus came out. For those who don't know, it was this incredibly powerful graphic novel that was about the Holocaust. It was about people in concentration camps, but it was the main characters were mice and the Nazis were presented as cats. I haven't seen it in 30 years, but that's my memory of it. And I remember I wasn't able to take this course, but someone taught a history of the Holocaust using that as one of the main primary texts. And I was just I guess it's not technically a primary text in that regard, but I was just so blown away by that. Like just the very thought of that blew my mind. And so I love that that has kind of helped lead to this much larger use of the medium.
Maus was groundbreaking, like absolutely groundbreaking for using graphic novels in the classroom, specifically in a social studies and history classroom. So like between that and Star Wars, using Darth Vader and stuff like that to talk about like the Nazis, there's a great comparison of like Darth Vader's speech that you can put side by side with Hitler's speech that like matches up way too closely for comfort. And like between those two, that like blew up the world of graphic novels and comics in education.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that sounds like such a powerful thing. And I'm so glad you're getting that. And in terms of the kids, I mean, are you finding that just everyone who's in seventh grade has seen some Marvel movie or has some familiarity? Do you have some students who this is not their thing at all, and either they're confused or maybe they're not as interested? Or is it just pretty is this kind of the universal thing for kids these days?
Yeah, it's the key word here is differentiation, because you are always going to have some students who are not on board for it, right? Not every student is a sports person. Not every student's an anime, a manga. Not every student is a comics and Marvel. Right. And so there are going to be some students that are like, yeah, this is not my thing, but I'm going to read it and I'm going to get the information I need from it. And I've actually gotten some people that after they have read Vote Loki and we've dissected and gone through all this and they created their project at the end, they're like, I think I actually kind of like Marvel a lot more. Like they never truly gave it a shot. And then so the key with it is like you can't just only do one thing.
Right.
You have to make a variety of things. It's the same way like when you're teaching, you have to make sure some things are for the auditory learners, the visual learners, the kinetic. Like you have to make everything because it's the best way for people to fully grasp a concept.
And I love hearing that because I'll say like I joke about being a dirty casual and all that kind of thing. But in large part, it's because I'm not a visual learner in the slightest. And I have I've gotten through some comic books and been able to enjoy them, but I'm not a person who looks like I went to Paris and saw the Mona Lisa and didn't get it. Like I most visual things, I don't understand what people see in it. And so most of the time when I read comic books, I need someone to actually tell me like what is happening in the art. You know, do you get, I'm guessing that you had some students who are much more into the visual side and some students who are much more about the words and the artistry, like kind of leaves them cold or they have trouble reading. And are you kind of adjusting to all those different kind of learning styles?
Yeah. I mean, and what's cool about this is that as you're reading it, I mean, one of the best things you can do, if you're not reading it as a whole class and doing things called reader's theater, that's where each kid gets a character to read their lines. You should put them in small groups because people are going to get different things out of it and a discussion needs to be had while you're reading it. Like as annoying as it was in middle school and high school, having your teacher, now let's discuss this chapter now that we've read it. It's important because it helps you actually fully grasp everything that was happening. I mean, there are times that a kid points something out and I'm like, I never even noticed that.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Or my interpretation is totally off from their interpretation. And I encourage my students to call me out on things. If like I'm totally wrong about something and I've like misspoken, they call me out on it all the time. And we're like, all right, let's research it. Let's find out. And then I'll admit, yeah, Miss Sissel's wrong.
And I love that because I think to me, that's one of the most important parts of the whole representation question is that And not just that, you know, your background or whatever kind of thing it is, your sexuality, your race, your gender, there's so much more that will affect your how you read things. But mm-hmm. those things certainly are very true. And I think it always does me so much benefit to hear how do voices other than my own see this? You know, like we're talking with Captain Marvel, like people relating to it that others might totally miss. Or like I know for me, there's a lot of times where a disabled person, I am very critical of disabled characters in media that, you know, my able-bodied friends think are great representation because, like, I see things that they don't, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And so it just sounds like, yeah, having the students be able to not just hear it from you, but be able to talk to each other from all their different backgrounds just seems like it's such a great learning opportunity.
Definitely. Like, when talking about, like, when we get to, like, West African and East African culture and stuff like that, mm-hmm. I like to throw up some stuff from, like, Wakanda because they use actual, like, Native African tribe languages and the clothing, the food, all of that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, every time I see it, there's always an African-American student in my classroom. Some of them are just actually African. I have several students, like, from Ghana and Ethiopia and stuff, and they, point stuff up, or even my partner, he's half black, half white, he'll point stuff out that, like, I never noticed, and I would never notice because I am white.
Right.
And so just being able to have those discussions and making sure that you are keeping a controlled, you know, safe setting where we can have those discussions with each other and know right. what it, like, how those discussions are supposed to look like.
Well, and so that would be another question of mine. And I'm afraid that what you're about to tell me is that 13-year-olds are more mature than a lot of people online. But we'll ask the question. You know, in most fan communities, and even like in our Stranded Panda community, we're a lot better about this than others. But even there, we've had some problems. Superheroes and Star Wars and things like that tend to generate fairly strong opinions.
Yes.
And those discussions can get fairly toxic fairly fast, especially when it's about, like, oh, you don't see this because of your gender, or you're, you know, or just like, you know, like I, you know, the kind of idiots who don't like Captain Marvel because they, you know, she doesn't have like the curves they want out of Marvel's comic book character, whatever it is. You know, and again, my assumption is that 12 and 13-year-olds are not the height of emotional balance and maturity. So do you get that same kind of some of those like hard discussions or toxic dynamics coming up, and can they be teaching moments, or are actually your middle school kids more mature than people discussing these things online? How does that play out?
We like to call middle schoolers sociopaths because they have actions without understanding emotions.
That tracks.
That's like the running joke among middle school teachers. But I would say they're probably about the same level as many people, because a lot of people never got taught proper communication and proper communication skills. So currently people and the current middle schoolers are pretty similar. The way that I have gone about this and I've found to be fairly effective is we do in-class debate warm-ups. It's not every day, probably like 2 to 3 times a week. They'll come in and they'll see something like, currently the one on my board is Pennywise versus Joker. You go to whichever side of the room that you stand on. And sometimes I'll just pose like an actual question. You know, the verses, it could be a lot of different things you can think of. Are we thinking like, you know, personality, who would win in a fight?
Team Tony versus Team Cap kind of things.
Yeah, that was like day one. I had that one up on the board, I think. But I put them on, they go on either side of the room. They pick one person to represent them. It's a different person every time. And they have 3 minutes to help that person come up with a 45-second argument about why they are better or why they would win or why their opinion is over the other.
Oh, I love that.
Everybody sits down. I have debate stands that say aff and neg, which are affirmative and negative for yes or no. And they stand behind them. They have their 45 seconds. We all do great applause for them, and we preface it every single time before we vote as a whole as a class that it's the person who gave the best argument, not your opinion. And then we vote as a class yay or nay for whoever. And then there are ifs, ands, or buts about it. We voted, and that's how it works.
I love that, because I think, to me, that kind of discourse is fantastic. And what I see online a lot, I certainly probably participated in it too much to be proud of, is the, like, you know, no, Star Wars is better. It just is. You're dumb if you think, like, that kind of nonsense.
Yeah. And
teaching the kids that it's not enough just to have a strong opinion, but that they have to be able to defend. I mean, not that they have, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But that the ability to explain an argument in a cogent way.
It is.
That's not just invective. That seems so powerful.
And then it's respecting the fact that we all have a right to our own opinions, which is like one of the main civic responsibilities about being a citizen of the United States, is that we all respect that we all have a say in things.
Right.
And so I do it with really lighthearted, silly things. I'll do like waffles versus pancakes, all kinds of stuff. Until we start getting more into the nitty gritty. So we're going to keep doing more lighthearted, silly things probably through September. Because after towards the end of September, we get into elections and political parties, which is where it really starts to cause discourse, with things. And so we do these lighthearted ways to learn rules of debate, how we interact with each other. That way, when we get to serious topics, we can truly research them and think about them.
I love that, because it seems like you're probably not only you're teaching them the skills, but you're teaching them to become comfortable disagreeing with each other, where I feel like you're probably building up levels of mutual respect among the kids.
It is,
you know,
yeah.
So that now when they're disagreeing about harder topics, you've established some degree of, like, I respect you even if I disagree with you.
There's also, like, it actually forms a better bond among students that might not have things normal in common. They're like, oh, you're a Superman fan? I'm also a Superman fan. You see my loser friend over there that's a Batman fan? I can't believe he went to that side of the room. And then they also have to learn how to put together, you know, an eloquent argument. And then they also have to publicly speak it in front of the whole class. And I've just seen so many students that, like, when they get a topic that they're really passionate about, all of a sudden the one kid you don't think is ever going to volunteer is like, I'm speaking.
That's fantastic. And so, and on that level, you know, in terms of how the kids respond, again, I think the stereotype has been very much broken down, but still holds a lot, that comic books are for boys. Do you see, is it in terms of who is and who isn't interested, is it pretty even across, you know, not just those two genders, the many different kind of gender identities kids might have?
Yeah.
Are there other kind of demographic groups where you see that, like, it is kind of splitting, or is it just really cutting across everybody?
I gotta tell you, I have a lot of females that are so into Marvel and comics, and, like,
that's fantastic.
I love geeking out with them so hard about all of this. Just as a female who grew up, you know, being the total band geek and nerd that, like, still can struggle to make friends, like, real genuine friends in life. It's so cool to see so many females into that. And overall, we got into this actually at AwesomeCon on a really great panel about how the things that kids get bullied for and stuff like that are not the things that were happening in the past. So, yeah. Like, liking Naruto and liking, you know, video games and comics and all of these things, that's not what somebody gets bullied for anymore. That is, like, a talking point that everybody loves. Really, what it is much deeper and more rooted in where it's more, unfortunately, of being race, ethnicity, religious, all the more deeper things. But, like, the general pop culture stuff really isn't something that people bully or argue over. Instead, it's like this point that everybody loves and gets so excited and passionate about.
Yeah. And that, I mean, as someone who went to school in the 80s, where being into Dungeons and Dragons and Batman was not the key to social success, that is very good for me to hear. You know, the Hardison from Leverage, Age of the Geek, baby. It's you know, it's just great to see that those kind of changes are happening.
We have an RPG club that we play D&D all the time. I run the comic book club, and we get people from all across the board into this stuff. And even if they're not super into it and they're, like, part of the clubs, they, like, casually wear shirts about it, or will be a casual fan about stuff.
That's fantastic. And so, the same way, like, I think the other thing that can happen a lot is the, oh, how dare you talk about, you know, Captain America when you haven't read these 30, you know, you don't know all the details of this. Do you get that kind of, like, gatekeeping thing among kids that you have to kind of rein in, or is everyone kind of starting from the same page?
A lot of them are starting from the same page. I actually find that a lot. Again, so kids, every generation is more liberal than the last.
Yeah.
And by liberal, I mean not as, like, rooted in their ways where they're, like, grow, like, they expand socially.
Right.
Sorry, I feel like I might get hate on the word liberal there.
I'm with you.
But, like, each generation is more liberal than the last. So, like, for me, sometimes, like, I'll go to, like, a comic book shop or something like that, like, if they've never seen me before, and I'll get, like, these mm-hmm. looks from, like, these white middle-aged dudes, like, she doesn't know what she's talking about or reading. Right. And I'm just like, I've actually, like, read comics my whole life. And I spend most of my money, I feel like, on Marvel yeah. everything. Whereas with the kids, it's like, oh, cool, you're super into that. Let's talk about it. Oh, you haven't read the comics? That's cool. Let's talk about the movie then.
That's awesome.
Like,
yeah, especially because I do think for many people, the movies and TV shows can be a lot more accessible. So it's awesome that at least
they are, yeah.
a gateway. And I imagine that this might be more like English class kind of stuff, but just the discussion of how a character is represented in the comics versus on screen, I think there'd be so much richness there to talk about in terms of character development and stuff like that.
And there is, but there's, like, I mean, you can talk about that in any class, because
yeah.
one of the key things that every educator needs to know is that we are all reading teachers. We are all English mm. teachers. It does not matter what subject you're in. That includes math, because even math has to solve word problems, be able to, you know, decipher those sentences.
Right.
We all have a responsibility to enhance that part of their education.
I love that. So do you have people bringing, since I know, like, one of the best ways that people love to interact with a lot of this content and make it their own often is through things like fan art or fan fiction or things like that. Obviously, again, staying in the PG-13, you know, appropriate for middle school age side of things, which
no
a lot of those things are not. But, like, have you had students either in your classes or in, like, colleagues of yours who are English teachers or art teachers who are using things like fan art or fan fiction or things like that as ways to kind of interact with these materials as part of the school process?
Not as much fan fiction, but I wish they would utilize that more mm-hmm. with some students, just because a big emphasis on eighth grade curriculum is creative writing, which is what fan fiction is. It's just taking a character and coming up with your own total storyline and going along with it. That's like the whole beginning premise of the Avengers game with Kamala Khan, is she wins a fan fiction writing contest.
Yeah.
But the art teachers, I've actually got them very interested in, like, looking at art through the ages, because mm-hmm. the art styles have changed and they've mimicked what the current art style might be. Like, pop art was really big at one point, and if you look at the comics, you start seeing more of the pop art style.
Right.
So they've gotten into that and using the artwork to analyze political cartoons. So just analyzing any fan art or anything, putting it on the board gets them used to being able to look at it and find the deeper meaning.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it seems like that's such a great way to kind of not only encourage them to create, but also to kind of, you know, critical art skills. You can use them to, like, look at, like, Renaissance paintings versus, you know, Impressionist. But, yeah, also look at, like, 1960s drawings of the Fantastic Four versus today, you know, or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Now, it does also sound like I know that you're open to all things, but my sense from what you're talking about is that you're pretty much a Marvel person. Do we have a little bit of DC hate in your classrooms, or is my boy Pat Batman and Dick Grayson and all those just as much a part of the curriculum?
Nah, they're pretty big into Marvel, just like I am. Again, I'm trying to bring more DC stuff into that. Just isn't something that I grew up reading as much. DC That's came fair. Out like with like Flash Facts, which is super great for science classes. We don't read like a full issue, but I pull up like images like from Superman and Batman and stuff like that. Especially when we talk about, you know, protests, free speech, all kinds of stuff like that. But the full issues that we've read are the Marvel ones. The biggest idea I've had is really looking to and doing a character analysis of Poison Ivy when we talk about environmental terrorism. I
love that. Yeah.
I'm so excited to – I haven't had time because I'm a teacher, so I have no life. dive into that later. I also personally use a lot of Avatar The Last Airbender when we get to
– so good as well, yeah.
Yeah, when we get to East Asia, because they kind of represent the different cultures, and it's just so cool.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I know, because this being an ethics podcast, we talk a lot about villains. And
yeah.
For me, one of the most interesting things to talk about is, you know, I'll often kind of write off the mustache twirlers, you know, who just want, like, power, mwahaha. But someone like Poison Ivy, someone like Mr. Freeze, someone who, like, you know, even Thanos, you could see, you know, people who feel like they are trying to make the world a better place, and they have a way they want to do it, but things like getting the consent of the people they're trying to help, maybe not so high on their list, you know? Like, I think it's such a great way of discussing everything from, like, you know, organizing and social justice work to, you know, what villainy can look like and how, you know, it's very easy to sort of just see our bad guys as, like, mustache twirling, you know, mwahaha type things. But that there's actually a lot more complexity, General.
It's really easy to write off people who have a different opinion from yours and a different way of going about things. And even though, you know, Poison Ivy does not go about it the right way all the time, her genuine concern of the things is something that should spark a, oh, something is wrong, we should do something about this. And it's a fascinating study if you're looking specifically at Western civilization and how it's moved and impacted, because we do the same thing where we don't always, and by always I mean most of the time, go about things the correct way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, I've always been the sort who's like, is Magneto really a villain? Was Killmonger that wrong? You know, like, they might have had some good points.
And no, that's the whole thing with Killmonger, and the whole point of the movie was that he wasn't wrong. Like, and T'Challa says, he's like, he was not wrong, but we need to go about it the way Nakia is saying we need to go about it. Right. And it's the same way, like, I mean, Loki is my favorite anti-hero of all time for so many. I mean, I grew up reading a lot of Norse myths in books and stuff like that. And then when I discovered it was a comic book character, I lost everything. And then when Hiddleston got casted, I lost everything again because I'd seen him in Shakespeare stuff in high school and like before that. And so he was already my favorite actor at the time. And I was like, no way.
Oh, that's so perfect.
and so seeing, like, looking at characters like that and looking at characters like Thanos, the movies don't give Thanos nearly enough, you know, credit and character development. It feels like he's just put in spurts and then they kind of make him seem like a mustache twirler when, like, I mean, he, comic book wise, he has so many storylines, especially in Eternals comics.
Oh, yeah. There's a podcast that I'm going to be part of starting in October called the Marvel Movie Minute. It's not a panda podcast, but it's related. We're going to get some pandas on as guests.
I think I've seen it on Twitter.
Yeah, you probably have. It goes into, like, very deep. Like, there's an episode about each minute of a movie. And we're going to go into Thor. And one thing I've been really enjoying with it is that we're talking about looking at all, like, the, like, yes, I can't relate to being a god. I can't relate to controlling thunder. But I can relate to, like, worrying if my father loves me more than my sibling, you know?
Yeah. And
I'm loving that when you really look at it and look at the subtle side of it, so much of that movie is about Loki, you know, growing up in the shadow of his brother, and that the, you know, the resentments he feels are very understandable, even if you don't like the, and especially, I mean, to me, one of my favorite ways to now read back into that movie is, you know, so much of that movie is about Loki thinking he will please his father by going off and conquering the frost giants and things like that.
In his mind, this all makes sense. He's like, this is what you did back in the day. I'm just trying to make you finally love me.
Right? And that's the thing is, like, when you watch the first Thor movie, you're like, Loki, why would you think that? Then you watch Ragnarok and are like, oh, no.
I get it.
It was like that, yeah.
Hela did it for him. I get it now.
Right? And like, I, as part of that, I've been having a lot of fun reading the original Norse mythology, where Loki is such a different kind of character.
Oh, yeah.
Much more the trickster kind of god, like a Hermes or a Coyote or someone like that.
He is. And that's why the Loki show is really cool, because you got to, and there's a reason why episode 2 is, like, my absolute favorite episode from the Loki show, because in the very beginning, you see the mischief and playfulness of him playing around with Miss Minutes and interacting. And you actually get all of that, which is a part of much more Norse mythology and even much more comic book Loki.
Yeah, very much so. I at some point need to go back and rewatch the Loki show, because from my perspective, I found it very disappointing. A, I have a well-known bias against time travel stories. I don't think they make any sense. I don't like them. But also, I felt like I was going to get genderqueer representation and bisexual representation. And they were so... It's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, no, I
were, such a bad job of that.
I felt the same way.
Yeah.
It's something that is supposed to be explored in season two, luckily, a lot more.
I'll look forward to that.
I believe the director, was it Kate Herron? I think it was Kate Herron who I directed that one. Mm-hmm. She was saying that they had to get to a very specific point. Because they had to, you know, introduce certain things and stuff like that for the whole phase four, and season two was supposed to be a much deeper dive into that.
Yeah. Well, and I think knowing that, I'll definitely go back and give Loki another watch, because I think I was so turned off by those things. But yeah, the character is so rich and interesting.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much to go into. And I guess the last thing about the Marvel DC thing I was going to ask is, I also know that more recently there's also been an explosion in independent comics.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot out there that are really pushing boundaries in terms of, like, different ideas of what it means to be a hero and representation and things like that. Are you able to bring any of those in? I imagine that kids know the big market stuff because that's what's on the screen and that's what their friends are talking about. So it's probably much more accessible. But do you ever bring in any independent stuff, or is it all pretty much the mass market?
It's much more accessible for them, and it's easier to create a better connection with that. So, like, right off the bat, I wouldn't do an independent comic because I'm trying to get them used to using comics and stuff like that, and
that
build
sense.
That first initial connection. But then there are a lot of really great comics. What is it? One that I picked up last weekend, it's called The Roaring Twenties, and it depicts, like, 20s culture and history really well, and this idea that dinosaurs somehow ended up in the 1920s, and it's like a whole thriller, like, one-off issue that somebody had.
Okay. Mod flapper dinosaurs.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That sounds fun.
If you're a D&D person, think Cholt. Yeah. Think Cholt.
Okay, yeah, that connects for me.
And then for, what is it? It was a Tuskegee Airmen. So basically it's essentially like many generations from now, and the Tuskegee Airmen had, you know, these are all their grandchildren and they're like space travelers. And so there's a lot of really cool like takes on history and putting like these grandchildren or people in like different points in time, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so there's some really cool ones with that. I would say a lot of independent stuff that I have found so far. There's going to be some really great ones coming out in the next, I think it's next month actually, because a publishing company is just kicking off. It's called like SCEX. Sounds like sex, but CEX. They're coming out with all kinds of cool comics, especially telling stories of immigrants that I'm looking forward to reading and hopefully bringing in. A lot of the previous independent comics, a lot of like weird like space odyssey cyborg stuff or fantasy stuff. I say weird, but it's fantastic. Much better for like English character studies. And so we're just now, I feel like just now starting to get independent comics that are hitting on other points for like other teachers.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
There is a, I can't remember the name of it, but a really, really deep dived computer science comic. Like several of them, like really advanced stuff. I don't remember the name of it. I will find it for you though. It's supposed to be really cool.
My day job is working with a group that helps teachers use computer science more in the classroom. So yeah, that would be a wonderful crossover. I'll look into that.
Yeah. It was one of my friends, he came to the panel I was running, and he had pointed out, because he's getting like his master's in computer science, and he discovered this, and I was like,
that's fantastic.
I was like, I'm not a computer science person, but I'll push it along to anybody I know of.
Yeah, definitely. I'll see looking at that. Now, we've got almost an hour, so I don't want to go too much longer, but I know one last kind of area I wanted to ask about. You mentioned that there's a particular way you can use these with English language learning students.
Yeah.
So talk more about that. I mean, like, are you talking about, like, are there sort of, like, translations of some of these comics in other languages, or it's more because of, like, you can use this as help teaching language, or how does that work?
So the key with English language learners is that, yes, you want to use some of their original language to help them learn the language, but there's a lot of research showing that the best way to learn a language is through full immersion, which is what we go by with our English language learners. So I teach a lot of the collaborative L classes where I have students who already speak English and then ones who don't even know the alphabet, honestly. And so the combination of the pictures and then seeing the words with the actions in the pictures, as well as there are a lot of cool comics like the Ms. Marvel having Urdu in it, as well as like Reptile and America Chavez that have Spanish in it. Like it's a lot of Spanglish, honestly, in those books. And if you don't know Spanish, some of it you struggle to read.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes. Yes.
That Spider-Man movie, the Miles Morales movie.
The interaction with the mom, with the Puerto Rican.
Yeah, I love that there's so much Spanish without translation, you know?
It makes me very happy. As a Spanish speaker, it makes me so happy. so it's a lot of that because we do the full immersion. And so they're able to get a little bit more content. A lot of these students, honestly, the fight is getting them to learn English. Just flat out earn English. And so if they, by the end of the year, can be like, this is what distance means, and this is what a punch is, you know, things like that. I'm like, I've succeeded. I've done my job.
And I imagine there, like, having it be a somewhat visual, you know, everyone can, like, look at a picture of, you know, Spider-Man swinging from a building and not need to know the word. Like, you can see the picture and understand what that means. And
like, this is what's happening.
That can be real helpful to, like, when you see the picture and the English words, it can help connect things.
It is. And the cool thing about comics and superheroes and stuff like that, it is something that is very, very popular among cultures that we don't even necessarily realize or think about all the time. A lot of third world countries or a lot of people coming from, you know, middle of mountains, nowhere and stuff like that. Even they have heard of Spider-Man. I don't know how. But even they have somehow heard of Spider-Man, and they will come to this country and they will see these things and they're like, ah, that's the American dream, Spider-Man right there. That's the American dream. And genuinely, that's what it's like. I have one student, he's from Mexico City, that like, I'd be like, he has Spider-Man everything. Like that is like when his mom went to get him like his first backpack and lunchbox and stuff like that, he wanted Spider-Man everything because it made him feel like he was fitting in with the American culture. It was a character he liked a lot. It was a character he related to growing up very poor. And so again, that's another thing that you're hitting, and you're creating that kind of connection with students that you have a really severe language barrier with, and you might be struggling to connect with, especially if you're just like a general teacher like I am, where we're just teaching our content and we don't specify on English language learners or SPED students.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I can totally see how that would work. Last question I'd have then is, you know, I know that from the little bit I know about education in my own work, that parental involvement can be super important. And, you know, if I'm doing my math right, it sounds most middle school students are probably the children of Gen X or even millennials who are very much the target audience for all the MCU stuff. Do you get a lot of cases where the kids are, like, their parents know this stuff and the parents are getting super excited that now the kids are asking about the stories that they love?
The number of parents that I get feedback from of them asking if they could be in my classroom is insane. I had one student that he would be on, and I'm gonna call him John, that's not actually his name. He would be on, last year he was completely virtual. I had like a combination of in-person and virtual. He would be like in the kitchen doing his work, and his mom was like a photojournalist and stuff like that, and we would be talking about all of this stuff and relate it to like all of these superhero things and stuff like that. And I would ask a question, and instead of my students answering the question, she would answer the question, and he would be unmuted. And I would have to be like, I'm sorry, ma'am, come on. Like, give John a chance. Let him answer the question, not you. You're not in school anymore.
I can understand it, though. You know, I mean, I can see where that hunger comes from. That's fantastic, though. Because I imagine when they're not taking over, the parents are probably very supportive and, like, help the kids learn about this stuff.
No, and when they come in, like, for parent-teacher conferences or the beginning of the school year for orientation and stuff, and they – because it's not just, like, that I use comics in the classroom. I also – I mean, like, I have the imagery of them everywhere. Mm-hmm. I have a massive Ms. Marvel cardboard cutout in my room, along with my Ruth Bader Ginsburg cardboard cutout. I have the LED lights with, you know, different, you know, like superhero pictures and stuff like that. And my comic books are everywhere. And so, like, you walk in and it's like, I feel like I went back home.
I love that.
And so, like, parents will come in and they get, like, they're, like, so excited. They're like, yes!
Yeah. No, I can tell this here. I mean, I have had, you know, my parents' generation, I'm Gen X myself. My parents were pre-boomers. And even just talking to my father, who grew up with some of these comics and didn't, you know, he grew up when comics were things that, like, 7 and 8 year olds read, so he stopped once he got even to middle school, but even hearing his stories about how important these were, has been such an interesting experience. So I love that it's something that kids can appreciate with their parents when that's the case, either, you know, because their parents loved it or because they're the ones introducing it to their parents.
And, like, with, especially, like, with Disney Plus and stuff like that, like, they're going home and they're watching, you know, like, WandaVision together as a family,
right,
and stuff like that. And so they're creating, like, a lot of really great connections. One of the big ones was I had one student, you know, we read Vote Loki, and they didn't do a lot with President Loki, which severely disappointed me because Vote Loki is my favorite comic line of all time. But even just seeing President Loki, a bunch of my students came back to me after the summer and they were like, I, like, screamed with joy, pointing it to my parents, going, I read that. And the parents being like, okay.
That makes sense. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you, Emily, so much for being a part of this. Is there any other kind of last things that we didn't get to touch on or points or questions you wanted to bring up?
So the big thing, just like if you're an educator, I like to go over like great ways to use comics. So Reader's Theater, where they each get like a different character and they read it out loud. Acting out comic scenes. One of my favorites is they actually interview one of the characters. So with Vote Loki, I have them pair up, and one person is a journalist from the Daily Bugle, and then the other person's Loki, and they have to interview Loki.
I would love that.
Making a TV or movie commercial out of it, actually creating your own comic strips and your own comic books. There's a really great website called storyboardthat.com, or even just doing it by hand, using them as analysis for primary and secondary sources, the in-class debates and discussions we talked about, throwing up imagery for class warm-ups, and political cartoon analysis are some of the biggest ways.
That's fantastic. Well, and thank you so much for this. And in the show notes, I'm going to make sure we list all the different websites you've mentioned, the Facebook groups and stuff like that. Emily, though, for people who want to find out more about what you're up to in terms of like places you're writing about this or when you're presenting and stuff, is there social media you want to share that people can follow?
Yeah, so join the Stranded Panda Network, of course.
Definitely an important thing.
All over it. I've been listening to them since like their first thing with Guardians. I'm all over there. And then for Instagram and Twitter, it's at Emily or Lou. So that's EmilyOrLou. Twitter is mostly me retweeting soccer stats and political things, if I'm being completely, and Marvel things. So those three things I'm retweeting. I'm much more active on Instagram, I feel like, as well as Facebook. But honestly, like, if you guys have, like, questions, you can email me. It's eCissell, C-I-S-S-E-L-L, at cityschools.com. If you literally just look up my first and last name, you'll easily find me because of my school and stuff like that. And you can even give the school call because I have my own landline in there, and it's 540-372-1145, extension 2227. Because I find it's much easier to just do, like, a phone conversation if you really have deep-ended questions. So lots of ways to contact me about this topic.
Well, and that's fantastic. And I hope for educators that this is super important. I also know we've done a couple of episodes now about being, a parent and a geek. And how do you introduce your kids to this? And how do you choose what content? I think a lot of what you had to say there has been so helpful. And so definitely reach out directly to Emily. But, of course, also if you want to kind of bring up feedback or thoughts in terms of if you're a teacher or a parent who's been using this stuff in these ways, if you are just someone who's interested and wants to know more or wants to share a different perspective or tell me how completely wrong I was in terms of the questions we asked, of course, we're always open to feedback there, too. You can find us at The Ethical Panda on – you can search for The Ethical Panda on both Twitter or Facebook. or TikTok. I have somehow decided that I'm too old for Instagram, but I can TikTok. You know, it's been fun. It's about one third me talking about comic book and MCU and DC stuff. One third is me talking about political stuff and religious stuff. And one third is me doing fun things in my wheelchair. So, you know, it's a fun little mix. The wheelchair dances tend to get the most attention, but hey, cool. You know, come to wheelchair dances, stay for the pictures of great food and the fun political discussions. So there are all those ways. You can also just email us at theethicalpanda@gmail.com. And of course, please check out this podcast, my other podcast, Star Wars Universe Podcast, and all the other great podcasts on the Stranded Panda Network. You can find those all at strandedpanda.com. There's great discussions there about the MCU, about Star Trek, deep dives into everything from the Fast and the Furious movies to the Godzilla movies to if geeks are talking about it, we're probably covering it there. Matt Carroll and I have just restarted our coverage of the Orville, which is going to go out on, I believe, the PandaVision podcast. We're still trying to figure that out. But between PandaVision, Bingers Assemble, MCU Cast, Animation Deliberation, which does great stuff on animated content, of which there's a great amount of stuff for all ages especially, but also, you know, for adults as well. Lots of great content. Check it all out. Check out theethicalpanda.com and strandedpanda.com. Please give us a review if you really like this podcast. Let us know what you thought. And most importantly, have a great day.